When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter x.com/AI.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snaps, it's the refreshing!
Gear from MLBShop.com helps you show everyone what team you're with before you even say a word. So people start asking you things locals and fans know, like...
You with the crew?
You from the D.
Where'd you go to high school?
Your dad put you in brown and gold.
You see skins, girl?
You get your Dodger dog?
Siempre 305.
You see Big Dumper 60?
Do you see him put Vladdy in the jacket?
How about 470?
You see Judges 62?
Shohei's 50-50.
The gear says it all.
Cut from the city. Go to MLBShop.com.
MLB trademarks used with permission.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast with you. Good to be with you on a what's a getaway day for a lot of folks.
Thursday.
Yeah. What did I say?
I don't know. I didn't know if you were struggling.
I definitely said Thursday. Yeah. No, I feel like I'm having a good day, man. So the Athletic has the biggest one outstanding remaining question. For each NFL team as summer break begins. This is from the athletic staff.
Usually I really enjoy these exercises leading into the season, except for this year. Anytime there's any kind of title like this, I know exactly what the item is going to be for the Texans, and it's something about C.J. Stroud.
C.J. Stroud, yeah. C.J. Stroud. Have they done enough, and Mike Jones is the one who provides the answer to this. He writes for the Athletic. Have they, the Texans, done enough to help C.J. Stroud take the next step?
Yeah. So I guess that's it. I mean, it's C.J. Stroud related, but it's more about the offensive line, the running back, the wide receivers, all of that.
Yeah. It is. Do you think they've done enough to help C.J. Stroud take the next step?
I think they could have done more. I mean, like, honestly, the Bears last year were just so incredibly aggressive at going out and fixing the offensive line.
And then the center went and retired after the year that they signed.
Yeah. But they still haven't shown that level of aggression. But over the course of 2 years, I can kind of appreciate, you know, Caserio's almost taken like the Dana Brown's approach. Caserio with the offensive line has taken Dana Brown's approach with the pitchers, which he's become a volume shooter. Where, all right, we're not necessarily going to blow you away with any of these acquisitions, but hopefully a few of them work out. And I think that's what ended up happening with that Ingram, but also Cam Robinson was part of that strategy.
Yeah.
And they brought in Trent Brown last year, and like, look, hey, that was a very low level signing. He was making, you know, not much more than the veteran minimum. But he ended up being a big part of that win streak. But this year they upped that a notch, but it still wasn't like they were going off after the top tier free agents, but just by addressing it with so many numbers, I'm cool with it right now.
Is there any connection? Because look, the thing C.J. Stroud is getting criticized the most for this offseason is the postseason last year. More so the Patriots game, obviously, because they lost that game, and it was four interceptions in the first half. But the Steeler game wasn't great either. But the Patriots game specifically, yeah, it hurt not having Nico Collins, but there wasn't part of me watching that game going, boy, C.J. Stroud's throwing four interceptions because they haven't done enough for him. I'm watching it going, C.J. Stroud's throwing four interceptions because either he's just making silly decisions or the moment's too big for him.
It so much of it felt...
And they couldn't run the football, I guess, to be fair.
No, I know, and I think that's the thing is that he had done a good job all year of managing that there were things that the offense could and could not do. And I think in the regular season, when you're racking up wins and you're seeing where you are in the division, maybe it was an easier challenge psychologically. But I think when you get into single elimination, maybe that's where just that feeling of this game really, really matters. And we're not doing anything offensively. If it was without thinking about the concussion or anything else, like if it was just him just pushing too hard.
Yeah.
Knowing that, all right, this time we're in the playoffs and that we got to make something happen. Like maybe his faith in the process flagged or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Cause even though, you know, people point out that he made some nice plays in the Steelers game, there are at least some positive things to point out too.
Oh yeah. Christian Kirk had 150 yards in that
right.
game.
Right. And that is true, but he also had some really bad. I mean, the flea flicker was one that you just got to eat it on that play.
Yep.
You know, he airmailed the pass to wide open Nico Collins. Like, there were some things that happened in that game that were still just really, really bad and atypical for CJ.
Yeah, yeah. And the weird thing, too, about that, and we'll get to some of the other teams here in a second, because there are some interesting questions heading into the summer break here for a few of the Texans' opponents this year. The other thing that people might say is, with respect to the New England game as well, Nico Collins missed that game also, and he's clearly their A1 number one guy. The weird thing about that is that Nico Collins missed the San Francisco game in the regular season, and I think you could that game has an argument as CJ's one of like his three or four best games as a pro.
Yeah.
That San Francisco game. There was no Nico Collins in that game. CJ was like 30 for 38 for over 300 yards, and they won the game.
The tough thing about that, though, is that the 49ers were missing half their starters on defense, and they ended up being one of the worst defenses in the league. You guys know I gush about Robert Saleh, but it was bad last year with how many injuries they had to their starters.
Yeah, yeah.
So, playing the Patriots at home in bad weather. Playing that defense without Nico Collins is a lot different than playing the 49ers at home in good weather.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, let's get to some of the other teams here with the burning questions for summer break. As I get back to the article here, let's get to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jacksonville Jaguars. One outstanding question for them is. Can they replace Travis Etienne Jr.? They really just kind of chose not to. They just let him walk.
Right. As they did they let Devin Lloyd walk on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
They are, like, the guys that they have returning as starters largely are guys who are already on the team.
Yeah.
So including guys who are backups to Etienne, where they like Tootin.
Tootin. I think Tootin's a good player.
Tootin's an interesting one. They do have a lot of guys on their roster where you wonder, okay, you remember Parker Washington. Parker Washington is a guy the last couple years, he'll make a big play against the Texans and I'll feel like, oh boy, he's really coming along. And then you look at his season totals and he's got like 400, 500 yards receiving.
But he's a good player, man.
I know. Like, no, you feel like he's the guy that might really all of a sudden kind of click for them. But they just also, even though they like Tootin, when the passing game started clicking, they really still weren't able to run the ball at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so curious about. Okay, are you really just believing that you're going to fix the things in the run game despite not adding anybody to your roster? Or are you, and are you putting all that much on Tootin or just improving the scheme? Or are you just feeling like you're going to be able to just do it all with Trevor Lawrence's arm?
Because
I'd be really nervous going into a season thinking, oh, they can do it all with Trevor Lawrence's arm.
I would, too, if I were a Jags fan. As a Texan fan, I hope they do that. I hope they lean heavily on him.
Parker Washington ended up having 847 yards this year last year. 390 the year before.
He's a play, and he's great in the return game, too. He returned a kick against the Texans for a touchdown. No, he's one of those guys, Seth, that is kind of like Alec Pierce was for the Colts the first few years. We're like, okay, his numbers aren't eye-popping, but boy, I feel like every time I watch that team, he's making a play or two in the game. to the point where during the season last year, I was looking up his contract to see how many years he had left. Because I'm like, boy, when he becomes a free agent, that feels like he'd be one of those kind of smart signings where you're not having to pay him $30 million a year.
Yeah.
He'd be really good for you.
And he's only had one good game against the Texans in 2024.
Yeah.
It was, he had six receptions for 103 yards. And that was the one that really stuck out in my mind.
Yep.
And then last year, he's had a couple of key catches in critical moments.
Yes.
That are like really nice snags. But so even in the Texans games, he didn't have great output in 2025. But I felt like, man, this kid seems like he's kind of money.
Yep. So that's Jacksonville. Cleveland Browns, they are on the Texans schedule. Of course, their situation still includes Deshaun Watson, and that's their big question. Who's going to be the quarterback of this football
team? I had a question for you because you listen to a lot more Browns radio.
Yep.
But the quote that caught my eye on this one was, Watson's one opening to win the job is new coach Todd Monken wanting a mobile quarterback.
Yep.
But Watson, through the spring, looked like the same inconsistent player he was through the first three seasons in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Is he still mobile after coming off of those two? He tore the same Achilles tendon twice.
Yeah.
Is he still looked at as a mobile quarterback?
As much as I listen in on Cleveland radio, I don't recall listening to them talking about his mobility, mostly because the two hosts that I listen to probably aren't out at camp. They're not watching him. And I don't know how big a topic that's been. I just know from watching what I've watched, and again, this is like the Tank Dell thing. Like, boy, you watch him doing these cone drills, and he looks great. Same thing with Deshaun. Like, boy, that guy had two Achilles tears. He sure is moving well with no other human beings to compare him to in this video that he's running around doing. So I don't know, Seth. It's a good question.
That he hasn't had his season high anytime since 2020 is 1,148 yards.
Season high for what?
For passing.
Over Pat? Oh, wow.
1,148 yards. Yeah. Did you think that was rushing? Sorry.
Well, that's where I thought you might be going just because we were talking about his mobility.
No. I was just looking, he threw over 4,800 yards in 2020.
Yeah, he led the league.
Since then, he's got a combined, about 3,400 yards passing total since then.
Seth, he's played in 19 football games since that season.
I was being too generous. He's got 3,010 yards passing since then.
Total.
Oh, no. That's right. Yeah. 3,010 yards passing.
Total. He's played in 19 games since he was a Houston Texan.
Yeah.
He has made nearly $200 million, and he's going to make another 40 this year.
Yeah, 3,365 yards.
Total?
No, I know. It's been 240, and the guaranteed money is still, nobody's ever had $240 million totally guaranteed.
Right.
Like, without any little, all the other options you see, or all the other guarantee numbers you see, there's a team option here or there or whatever, and so they consider them practical guarantees. Nobody's had $240 million 100% guaranteed.
Here you go.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Here's
your money.
This is your money.
19 games.
Since 2020, missing all of 2021. I don't know if he was injured or maybe something going on in his personal life. and then all of 2025. Yeah.
So over the course of five seasons, 19 games. God, man.
19 games.
Yeah.
3,365 yards.
Here's what Zach Jackson, who covers the Browns, says about that particular quarterback battle. You mentioned the one opening to win the job is Monken wanting a mobile quarterback, but Watson, through the spring, looked like the same inconsistent player he'd been in Cleveland. Shedeur Sanders finished the spring strong, but didn't thoroughly outplay Watson. So the battle will resume in late July and continue into August. That was actually the big topic up there, Seth, as this was all playing out in OTAs and minicamp, is that Todd Monken wanted to pick somebody heading into summer break that was QB1, and he wasn't able to. And it's not because both guys were amazing and just throwing haymakers at each other. It's that both guys
nobody's
wildly
choosing
inconsistent.
To win it at this point.
Yeah, it's wildly inconsistent. So that's Cleveland. Other Texans opponents and the big questions. How about the Eagles? The opponent that they play on Christmas Eve.
The Eagles are another team, because we always watch this with a little bit of extra interest when somebody who's in the Kubiak Shanahan type of tree wants to do what Kubes and Shanahan
have done.
Is
that what Mannion is? Their new
OC? Yeah, Mannion's going to be running mostly a West Coast style, a lot of QB under center, doing a lot of stuff that's different from the way they've operated. I mean, they're under center in the tush push all the time, but I like that. if Jalen Hurts adapts to it, it could end up being, you know, one of these like every other year where all of a sudden Jalen Hurts, did I say Jaden Daniels? Jalen Hurts, you know, looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Yep.
I'm intrigued by it. I'm not going to believe in Mannion until he proves it.
Yeah, and that's the question that's being asked for this. And it's Brooks Kabina who has the answer. Shout out Brooks Kabina. Does the system suit the quarterback?
Does the system suit the quarterback? And then, I mean, the whole other part about it was, man, there's always weird stuff going on in Philadelphia. But Jeff Stoutland choosing to leave the team, it feels like it. When I see some of the people talk about the Eagles, the players, where they're trying not to say anything wrong or anything, they almost look like at this look in their eyes of like a hostage video. I feel like whatever level of dysfunction they've been comfortable, they've actually thrived with a certain amount of dysfunction in Philadelphia. Maybe this is finally the breaking.
Maybe
point.
For me in Philly, like they've passed the point for me where I'm going to start using that against them. They've just existed in it the entire time with Sirianni there.
To be what works with Sirianni.
Yeah, it's like they're like a team version of one of those. You know what they are? They're like the team version of Stefon Diggs, where Diggs has all this stuff going on in his private life. He's getting sued. He's got baby mama drama. He's always got drama going with teammates. And yet the guy just goes out and puts up 1,200 yards every year, even though he's got all this stuff. The Eagles are like the team version of that. Like, they got all this stuff going on. Nick Sirianni's literally jawing with fans at games. A.J. Brown hates Jalen Hurts. This guy hates that guy. Who the hell else? No, the constant turnover at offensive coordinator. And you look up and they win 12 games every year.
Right, right. And it's a disappointment. I think that there's a part of the way they operate that I feel like with Jalen Hurts, because he's such a unique quarterback, he's just kind of fits into his own category of his skill set. Even for dual threat quarterbacks, he's a unicorn. Because of the power element, you know,
like
he's
just the lower body.
Yeah. That I almost feel like I feel like they're at peace thinking, you know what, just every couple of years we need to bring in a different offensive coordinator who's got a different way of using a mobile quarterback that can make up for some of his deficiencies as a passer. And we just spring it on the league. And if we feel like they're starting to catch up, then we just bring in a different offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Like Sean Mannion will win a Super Bowl and then get fired 2 years later.
Right. Excuse me, a couple more of these. These are final outstanding questions heading into the summer, and we're doing some of the Texans' opponents this year. The ones that we find interesting or entertaining. This one I know you like for the Giants. Will Malik Nabers be ready for week one?
Yes.
Now, that's not the funny part.
The answer is probably no, and they just keep bringing – they bring in all these decrepit old guys, and it gets treated with such fanfare.
Yeah.
Like Odell Beckham Jr. being out there, and I'm watching drills of him going, like, running through cones at OTAs, and people are saying, look, he's still got it. He's still got it. He hasn't had it on an NFL field for 3 years now. I don't know. The Giants are fascinating to me because I feel like the fan base – it's super optimistic, and yet at the same time, the fan base understands that they're probably not even going to be a 500-win team this year.
Yeah.
It's kind of refreshing in a way.
Okay, these are the oldest free agent receivers still out there.
Yeah.
What if they signed Keenan Allen? Keenan Allen was actually pretty damn good last year.
No. Keenan Allen would be a big step up from.
Yeah, he'd be big. Yeah. See, it's Tyreek Hill.
They've got Juju Smith-Schuster, Odell Beckham Jr. on the roster.
Braxton
Berrios in a way. Yeah. Like if you're looking at him as an actual receiver, good luck with that. He's not old, but they've got names you recognize. I think Keenan Allen would be a guy like, that's a name, and he's past his prime, but he's still very effective.
Keenan Allen, Tyreek Hill, and Stephon Diggs are all out there right now.
What was that? Remember there was that fervor over Tyreek Hill was going to be ready sooner than people thought?
Seen that.
Somebody threw a bunch of cold water on that.
Okay.
He had a really... The nature of his injury was way worse than I think people realized at the time.
Yep. All right. We don't.
Who was the other one? It was Tyreek Hill.
Tyreek Hill and Diggs.
Yeah. Diggs makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
The fact that Diggs hasn't signed yet kind of surprises me and makes me wonder, okay, maybe there's something more in his personal life. There's always something in his personal life. So who knows?
Yeah. It's kind of a dead time.
Yeah.
Kind of a dead time. We'll see. I take him back here. All right.
It's not a dead time to sign somebody.
No, I know, but it feels like everybody's on vacation and stuff like that.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter X.com/AI.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Happy Wednesday to you indeed. Hope crew's here. That's the OG John Lopez. I'm Reginald Atatula. Figgy Fig on the ones and two. Shout out to our guy Bryson, also holding things down for us on this day.
Eight sack Bryson.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is it good if we kind of put that on him to where like that's kind of his nickname? Because how is it not? You don't want to like be the guy who's trying to relive high school the whole time.
No, we're doing it. He didn't. See, you can't.
We're not treating him like Al Bundy.
Had he given himself that nickname, we'd all be running around.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, is that how
we're giving
now?
Him that nickname?
Okay, all right, cool.
Yeah, I hate when people give. We know that. When
right, you
give
Bryson, we good with eight sack Bryson. All right, I'm getting a thumbs up right now. Yeah. Eight sack Bryson on the ones twos for us as well. But yeah, you as well get involved with the program 713-572-4610. And yesterday, amongst a number of things that were happening in the world of sport and otherwise, the Rockets finally decided to join in on free agents, which honestly, free agency, which opened up yesterday.
It didn't feel like it, man.
Really and truly did.
A lot going on.
I ended up looking up, seeing when it started. I'm like, oh, it started today at 6?
Yes, yes. It started.
I had to look it up.
I either got home or it was right before I left. I said, free agency. I got a notification. Free agency starts in 4 hours. I was like, oh, really?
Yeah. And I thought about this yesterday. Like, do I need to make mention of it? But it was already very clear that the NBA has kind of shifted the way that this goes. And free agency is less of an avenue for like getting things done. And it felt kind of like that, especially even as the Rockets were getting involved. There's two players that are newly expected to join the Rockets that we learned about yesterday. One of them is former Los Angeles Laker Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart, point, really kind of a combo guard of sorts. And Marcus is, I mean, we saw him in the playoffs, right? Like you absolutely saw what he is and what he does. Marcus Smart, the 6'3 guard who... I think he was drafted to, or he played in.
Where was he drafted?
Oklahoma State. Oh, where he was drafted?
Where he was drafted?
Drafted from?
He was drafted from Oklahoma State. He went. Yeah. He was drafted to Boston. Played in Memphis. Yeah, right. Ended up in L.A. I was trying to remember what the path was, but yes, he has the relationship with Ime, which you imagine is a big part of why he ends up here. Defense is still there at a high level. Mm-hmm. Can run an offense, and that's got to be a reason why they bring him in. In addition to that. Bogdan Bogdanovic, who is also kind of like a guard forward type when it comes to it. Last played with the Clippers. He's getting a little up there, but I mean, he has been a sharp shooter in his career, although last year was not a great shooting season. 77 games in the last 3 years.
Yeah, that's the big rub. There,
and so
right?
these are the additions that the Rockets have made, and the money of this matters, and I think it's a big thing in it, but how do you feel? How does this feel as a move, especially as what it tells you about the offseason that the Rockets are engaging?
Well, I think it tells you it's the answer to the question we had last week. You know, we asked a couple of times because it was so, you know, it's front of mind and also, you know, something of a mystery. Like, you know, what are they doing? Well, I think now we know what they're doing.
They're cooking.
Couldn't even finish that sentence without laughing. He couldn't even finish the sentence.
I saw those signs. I'm like, ooh, Lopez, you got to take what you said back.
Take it back. No.
So just to make sure I'm 100% clear, Marcus Smart indeed signs on a 2-year deal, $13 million. The second year is a player option. So it's a 1+1 that kind of works so that if it goes well for him, he probably opts out of this. This ends up being a 1-year deal, and he moves on to somewhere that's willing to pay him more.
Yeah.
And if it does not work out as well, he's probably going to pick up his option.
Gets his money.
You have the second. But none of that is too crazy, because I know he was previously with the Lakers. The Lakers really wanted to retain him to help them continue doing what they were doing, for whatever that's worth. Bogdan, it's a 1-year deal, and we have not gotten terms on it, so it feels like it's a vet minimum deal.
Yeah, and so like in terms of like what they're doing, I think we have a better feel for it. They are in the margins. They are sort of tweaking the roster. They're, you know, it's not something that I don't think any Rockets fan would be thrilled about. But at least you know where they're going with this, and they feel like this is a team that they can take into next season and contend. I mean, what is the big deal that's out there for them?
I think it speaks to me, at least for me, that they wanted to make sure to prioritize returning Tari Eason. Because when I talk about the money in it, right now, these deals allow them to add what it feels like is, one, a veteran point guard so that you don't find yourself in that same place last year where you go, we do not have anyone who can run offense, right? Especially if Fred VanVleet remains, you got Fred, you've got Marcus Smart, and then you can also lean on, getting Reed Sheppard some instances of running the offense. So they didn't want that to happen again. That felt like that was the takeaway there, in addition to not sacrificing it all on defense. Bogdan Bogdanovic, is one of those players where if you had signed him 3-4 years ago, I would have absolutely
all in,
loved it.
Right?
Like,
right.
if I take away and we don't think about the injuries and the age right now, which of course, that's not how this works. But if we don't think about that, he is a dude who is a shooter. He can also create a little bit as like a secondary playmaker, which if you talk about what Ime Udoka had said with this offense is he wants it to be read and react. If it's going to be read and react, you need other players outside of a point guard who can make plays. Bogdan is kind of that. He could play a little bit of three, play a little bit of two, offensively inclined player. That's exactly what this team needs right now. Except he's older, and maybe more importantly, like when he plays, he's actually not that bad. He played 23 games last year. He played 77 games in the last 3 years. The injuries have oft come and interrupted his capabilities. So there's no way that you get him on a vet minimum and you're thinking about him being anything other than somebody out the peripheries of your rotation.
Situational shooter, that type thing. Yeah, just overall, I don't think... I think it's absolutely fair to say this is not like, blow your skirt up kind of a day that they had, but it's what they feel they can get better with in the margins and all that. They're not a contender at the highest level, but they feel like, okay, if we get what we think we can get out of Bogdanovic, if we can get some, you know, point guard play that's more reliable, veteran point guard, bring in some of these younger guys. If, you know, Durant has another good year and they can improve elsewhere, specifically Jabari and Şengün, you get a man. They feel like that's enough. I don't feel like that's enough to get to the top. But you know what? They're not going to do anything spectacular at this point.
Well, I think that there's still stuff to be done because obviously Tari Eason, they need to get he's a restricted free agent. And why I mentioned that money, a vet minimum and what is essentially $6.5 million from these two guys. It allows them to still probably match whatever salaries he goes out and he gets in an offer sheet without going, you know, dealing with the ramifications that are really hampering everybody when it comes to the aprons and whatever. And so this almost guarantees that Tari Eason can be back with what they have.
It helps him.
Without them having to try and figure out what's happening with Capella and Dorian. They can still move off of those guys in the future. I think that is still in play for them to use those contracts, especially the expiring one in Dorian Finney-Smith, and get themselves somebody else. This is the thing for me that I thought about with this, with these moves. I still look at this team and I go, there's a lot of talent on this team. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you can deny. There's probably, what, 6, 7, maybe 8 guys that I could look at and I go, they're playing either starting or a prominent rotation piece on damn near every team in the league. That should be a team that is capable of contending. It is more making sure that you have the right context around them and the right usage. Context-wise, this doesn't feel like a ton. Because as mm-hmm. I just mentioned, Marcus Smart, I kind of like him as a fallback point yeah. guard, and he can play defense. But I would have loved to have somebody that could shoot a little bit more consistently. Maybe you see an uptick, but I'm not sure. Bogdan, I love him in theory. I just don't know how available he'll be. Yeah. I was talking to one NBA writer who's covered him recently, and basically he was like, the expectations should be below the floor for him. Like, at least when it comes to availability, just to keep...
What were you saying, Figgy? Cooking.
If he can play, great. But that's a big if, right, with what we've seen. Yeah. But I think that all of this still comes to utility, and I think it really falls on if Ime Udoka is putting the right system around, there's still a lot more to be dragged out of this team, even as they're currently constituted. And I think that that's really the big thing is we need to see what the capability is of this team, and I think that falls more on Ime Udoka than the talent that they have on the roster.
It does. I think right now they're a 4 seed at best, 5 seed more than likely somewhere in that
in the middle.
And that's not gonna get anybody excited, you know, in terms of, hey, this is it, we got Durant, compared to what we're thinking. But they're basically signing up for, let's get to the postseason and see what happens. That's what they're banking on with this team.
And I think in addition to that, like, I think that I could see them being a better team if there is a better circumstance. It's just we know Ime can be pretty hard headed, and but I mean, look,
yeah.
I have a hard time, again, looking at the talent that they have and saying that you can't ring out more, and I say ring out as if there's not like opportunity there for you in a situation where they actually have the right context, the right circumstances when it comes to being able to set the table for them.
I kind of wish they would have gotten Luke Kennard. He was very affordable.
See, now that's the issue, right? You see
but
Luke
he's not
Kennard
a defensive guy.
You see Luke Kennard go for a relatively affordable
$12 million
cost,
for 2 years?
Right? You see,
13 or something like that.
I'm trying to think there was another shooter that
when you're
went.
Taking him over Bogdan?
Yes.
100%. Yeah.
Just off of the strength of...
Yeah. Getting, just off the offense.
Getting,
right
getting a shooter. Now, the thing with Luke Kennard that Bogdan, in theory, gives, again, availability is really important, and I don't know if that's going to be here, is that secondary playmaking is big in my mind that they need. But having a shooter that you could turn to at times, would have loved to have that. And there was a few of them that went during free agency that absolutely made this feel a lot less special. The Marcus, the Bogdan, it made me feel a lot less special. When it came to this, right? Somebody, Ocho, is talking about wanting Spencer Dinwiddie and Nick Batum. Nick Batum, at least he would play, but I feel like you're getting a little bit of what Bogdan would be. Spencer Dinwiddie, I just feel like, hey, man, that one is one of those ones where people have a lot of love for Spencer Dinwiddie, and I don't know if it actually looks the way that we tend to imagine. But either way, right? This is not inspiring, but I do wonder if it sets a table for them to maybe do something. But again, That's still hope peddling. That's still wish fulfillment that we're trying to get here. And right now, I think ultimately, if that's well, with the circumstances that they've laid out for themselves, it falls on Ime to be better. Ime to be better.
You're
for the
absolutely
upside.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Caitlin Clark brings out of people. What Caitlin Clark brings out of people.
Now those other girls get really mad.
These men here on the text line get really mad too. She's been assaulted. Mm-mm. She's been assaulted. Choked out. Come on, Bill.
Yes.
And the wild thing is, Ty, you know who my favorite player in the WNBA is?
Sophie Cunningham.
Nope. Caitlin
She's
Clark.
My favorite.
Caitlin Clark is my favorite player in the in
I knew
the
that
WWE.
Before I asked you the question.
And I think
big CC guy.
And I think especially that first year there was clear jealousy. We talked about that. I think you like to me, I don't think you watch the WNBA as much. The WNBA has a huge physicality problem. And Caitlin gets her ass kicked, but they all get their asses kicked. I mean, it is a physical league. And the better players who have the ball a lot, who they want to get even more physical with, they are really physical with. But again, I think Caitlin would laugh at some of the things that some of you all are texting in and say, hey, man, this is ball. Just like when she walked up that girl's back and started talking trash to her, she don't need to be coddled. She good
yeah,
with it.
I completely disagree with that that thought of she needs to be coddled, or the league should coddle her, or the refs or anybody.
She doesn't want that. Caitlin, I don't know how to say this. She is like a lot of great players. Caitlin is an ass.
Yeah.
She is. I mean, just watch basketball. Like y'all didn't say Wimby assaulted Jalen Brunson when he grabbed him by the back of the head and shoved him down on the ground. That was a little excessive. What happened? Who was Jalen Brunson for the Knicks? Their best player. What was it clear that the Spurs wanted to do to Jalen Brunson? Be physical with him. What did they do? Be physical with him.
Mushed him.
Castle got in a 3-point stance at the 3-point line and took off and just slammed him right in his chest in the middle of the baseline. Like she's playing ball. They're playing ball. It is ball. All right. Some roster moves. Okaiwe, man, lost him. Thought he was just going to Triple A Sugarland. He is going to the IL with a right knee sprain. That might mess with your pitching a little bit.
Yeah, thong, man. Happened fast.
Yeah, man. Damn. I think
his ass up out of here. We don't need him anymore.
I think we may have seen the last of him this year. Well, we'll see. Who knows with the injury front for the Astros? You never know. They may need him.
Yeah, don't speak too soon.
Yeah, he is in West Palm Beach and will continue his throwing program, is what Joe Espada said earlier. Here is the news, and I wonder how you feel about this. And I'm telling you, last night makes me nervous, and what I thought could happened. Christian Javier is going to the bullpen, Joe Espada said, as he returns to the lineup.
That was a no-brainer for me.
I knew it, man. All they needed was those two starts from Mike. Mike had two starts, and he gave up a total of one home run.
No, this has to be a stretched out.
What did he pitch last game?
You're right, six innings.
He went six innings the last game he pitched.
You're right.
Stretching Kikuchi tonight.
No! This is, right? What's the rotation? The Burrow boxes. It is.
It's a great marketing idea.
It is Hunter Brown, Leakin Oil, Spencer Arrighetti, Pete, Big Pete, Emi, who's going tonight, and Burrow has slid in there. Kaiway is now on the IL. And they didn't brought up Christian Javier, and he's going to the bullpen.
I was having a good day, man.
What is this?
I was having a good day. I've been talking about this Christian Javier thing for 2 days, and I saw him sitting in the dugout yesterday and got a little excited, had a little round face, been sucking on them Coronas, fully dressed again, him and Fromber. Oh, man, and that last outing in Sugarland was tremendous. And he's going to the bullpen, and they're going to leave Mike Burrows, Homer Mike. They're going to leave Homer Mike as the five
these
starters.
These two starts done it for him.
I got to text my old coach. He's going to be beside
himself. They have kept him in. It was by the grace of God Mike didn't do what he normally does. That was a hit. And by the way, Yordan Alvarez in left field. Boy, you talk about a complete misplay that he had that ball.
when he left that ball.
Yeah. He said, that's all right. I'll get you back, Mike. Maybe you owe it, Mike.
How about when he almost got backdoored at first base? You see that? You'd have been nervous. Did you see it?
Yeah, he makes me nervous.
I don't even give a damn if he was out. I thought he hurt something when he
just
slipped.
Get
on
out. Just stay. Just oh, get out. God. Just stay, man. Just stay. What are you
the
leading
the crazy
off for?
Thing, the announcers did the same thing. The announcers were like, oh, whoa.
What are you leading off for?
What is going on?
They hit, I think it was Christian Walker behind him and hit that opposite ball,
yeah.
That ball over there. And I'm thinking, don't you dare even think about going first to third. Don't you even think about it. You better Cadillac your ass right into that second base. Just stop. Don't you get aggressive. That man overran that ball. But this is feeling like a Jake situation. I just don't understand what they are looking at and saying, Mike's it.
I mean, would you rather them go to a 6-man rotation?
No, I'd rather them go.
Well, I know that. I think everybody's with you on that. Is like move Mike to the bullpen and let Christian have that fifth start. But would rather than this, Christian go to the bullpen after?
No, because the 6-man rotation means less starts for Hunter Brown, and
it also means less starts for Mike.
But we've got to get to a space of just no, like who, but like it's as if he had these last two starts and they're like, this does enough for him.
Yeah.
Like nothing about last night said, let me not just see what Christian Javier looks like as a starter. There's nothing about last night says that. I guess unless we hear Joe, and Joe thought after he got through that first inning that could have ended the game had he would have gone, which he normally does, to Burrow boxes. We're sitting here at a 5-6-0 lead, and then he was right on his way to doing that.
I'm trying to do the best I can.
My man went 5 innings. Gave up 3 runs in the first.
I didn't think he was going to make it out of the first, boys.
The hell with the first. He somehow passed Christian Javier.
What do you think Christian's going to be out of the pen? What's that look like?
Whatever Mike was. What did he say?
We didn't see him, but once.
We're going to see him piggyback.
We've seen Javier out of the pen. It's just been a number of years now.
But what's
he going to be with this group? Yeah. I guess when you've got MI going, you got MI, you got Mike, you got some guys that the wheels can come off of pretty quick.
Oh, well, hell yeah. I mean.
But he can't be relegated to that. He's got a pitch.
But that, where are you going to be, man? It is an interesting thought. I do, man.
It is a buzzkill for me. I'll be honest with you. He was completely off my radar 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the Astros.
Oh, no, and then they sent him down, I thought,
well, I go, about Christian. I go on vacation and I come back, and on my way back, or actually I was still there, I look at it, see it on social media, 6 innings, pushing 94 velo. What do you have, no walks?
Yep.
No earned runs. I'm just like, man, all right, Christian's back, man. Let's get him back. And now all of a sudden, we're going to push him to the bullpen, and we got to watch more MI and Burrow.
And see, I knew there was something up when they said he's made his last rehab start, and then they kept him down there to make another one. I knew something was up.
When is the other one?
He made it. He made the last one he had.
Saturday?
He was supposed to come up. Got to start it. Before that.
I thought you, when you said that a couple days ago, I thought you meant he had another one. I'm thinking, damn. And then I saw him in the dugout last night, and I got a little excited.
We'll see, man.
Bullpen.
I'm sure they just do weird things. By the way, the lineup is out today, and maybe they heard us on that Taylor Trammell thing because he's in center field again. He started all 3 games in center field in this series. But Altuve Alvarez is back at DH tonight. Paredes is at third, Walker, and then Cam Smith with Trammell behind him. Yiner is behind the plate again. Joey Loperfido and Odell Gatto is in the game at short. So that is the lineup tonight: Altuve, Alvarez, Paredes, Walker, Smith, Trammell, Diaz, Loperfido, and old Delgado. So there it is. Luckily for Joe, it does feel like they're 3 like stud players. They got like 3 great players in Hunter, Josh Hader again last night. I mean, it's just, you can go ahead and get in your car and go ahead and go home with Josh, just blowing it by people. And then obviously Yordan. It does feel like this AL West is bad enough, and the AL as a whole is bad enough that the 3 of those guys playing at a high level can drag this Astros team, who's now 2 games under .500, drag this Astros team to to a playoff spot.
Yeah.
Because they have those three guys that are special enough.
Yeah.
If they can get it to Josh, and if they can put people in positions where they have to pitch to Yordan like they did last night, and if they can – they can get Hunter every fifth day to go and do his thing.
Yeah, those three superstars, if you will, I mean they're good enough to where if you're others, and when I say others, I don't mean the 6 through 9 hitters. I'm talking about Pena and Altuve and Christian Walker. If those guys are on their game, the Astros are going to be a problem.
Yeah,
the Astros,
especially
are gonna be a
problem. in this the division where they are.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's maintain in the letter X.com/AI.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple, isn't it refreshing?
Keep cool out there, folks. It's gonna be a hot one.
We the people love summer baseball. The food is over the top. The cheers come from the chest. We came with friends, but we met new ones. We have seats, but we're standing. They say it's anyone's game, but from what we can see, it's everyone's. Baseball for the people.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show, How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend, Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, this may fall into the category of things that only bother Sean T. Pendergast, but maybe there's other people out there. Victor Caratini seems like a delightful human being.
Yeah.
Really liked him as a Houston Astro. I said this offseason, this team is going to miss Victor Caratini.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, Christian Vasquez has been fine. He's come back down to earth a little bit, but whatever. And Caratini plays a nice, important role on the Twins. Caratini got a tribute video the other night, a 90-second tribute video the other night. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm a spoil sport. He played for the Astros for 2 seasons. They made the playoffs and got swept in the wild card round in one of those seasons and then missed the playoffs in the other season. He had a .263 batting average and a .735 OPS while he was an Astro. Hit 20 home runs in 2 years. All well and good.
Yeah.
We need standards for the tribute
this
videos.
They've lowered their standards too much in giving Victor Caratini
I hate that he's the one... I hate that he's the one I'm making an example out of, because the fact of the matter is there may have been another tribute video that's even below the Victor Caratini line
right. That
I missed, but I didn't miss this one the other day. I saw this one. I saw it on social media, asked people who were at the game and asked AI, was this an actual tribute video that played before the game? And both entities, humans and the robots, said yes, it was. It was a 90-second video, and I watched the video, and it was great.
Yeah,
and I like Victor Caratini. I just feel like we need standards for
this. You know
this.
What? You know where I am on this, though, Sean? And you're really going to hate this.
Yeah.
I feel like, for one, Major League Baseball, I don't know why they insist on this, but by far, they are the most annoyingly decrepit and antiquated sport when it comes to big board entertainment during the game, including just showing. They are so reluctant to show any replays from the from the game at all on the big board. Yeah. I don't understand why it's that way.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of all for, like, anything at all that you guys are willing to do to improve my short attention spanned brain while I'm watching a game, to where, like, oh, look at that. It's a nice, oh yeah, Caratini.
Well,
I remember that play.
Not to nitpick, but the tribute video played 20 minutes before the game.
Yeah.
So that's not going to help you. The Victor, unless they replay it during the game.
Helps people maybe get their butts in the seats quicker.
Got to get in for the Victor Caratini highlight tribute video.
Yeah.
This was, so I spent more time than I should have yesterday coming up with a criteria for a player being deserving of a tribute video. Okay. This is the Pendergast criteria for former Astros being tribute video worthy. If you were not on one of the World Series teams, not on one of the World Series title teams, either 2017 or 2022, if you're just a regular player who didn't play in the World Series,
yeah,
you have to have been an all-star. Just fulfill one of these criteria. Not all of them, just one. You either need to have been an all-star one time, been a winner of a major award one time. Those two things would probably go hand in hand. If you won an award, chances are you were probably an all-star. Or you had to lead the league in one major statistical category. You had to have a batting title or an RBI title. I'd even take, like, wins above replacement, whatever. You have to have one of those bold numbers on your baseball reference page.
Yeah.
That's not a high bar to clear. One all-star season, okay? That's if you weren't on the World Series teams. Now, if you were on one of the World Series teams, but you didn't fulfill the all-star award criteria,
yeah,
then one of three things needs to have happened with you. You need an iconic game-saving or game-winning play in the World Series. I will call this
like Chaz.
The Chaz McCormick rule.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Chaz deserves a tribute video based almost entirely on that catch that he had against the Phillies in Game 5 of the World Series. He's a hero for that one play. Now, you got to go find another 84 seconds worth of stuff to put in there. It can't just be you replaying one catch and going, everybody give a round of applause for Chaz McCormick. Like, you got to come up with something, but that gets him inside the velvet rope of the tribute video world. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's number one. You need an iconic individual game performance. Like, Chaz was just one play, but like, if you had a game where you went 4-for-5 or you were, say, the starting pitcher in a combined no-hitter in a World Series.
Okay.
Christian Javier's never been an all-star or won a major award or anything, but Christian Javier being the starting pitcher in the no-hitter in the World Series against the Phillies when the Astros are trailing 2-1 in that series. I mean, they went on to win the rest. They swept the rest of the way after that. Christian Javier would be deserving of a tribute video someday when he leaves, even with his 12 ERA that he's got this year.
Definitely.
Because he's not been good since that
game. He had a 12
game.
ERA on another team, especially. Yeah.
Then you're like, yeah, start that guy.
I have one more.
If you have like an iconic, memorable performance on the way to a World Series, like in the playoffs I'm talking about, preferably against the Yankees, we'll call this the Lance McCullers 24 straight curveball rule.
Mm-hmm.
If you have some sort of game that people remember you for, like when people bring up Lance McCullers' name 20 years from now for Astro fans, that's probably the most memorable thing, was him throwing those 24 straight curveballs in the ALCS.
Yeah.
That is good enough for me.
I'm
not a monster.
Now, Lance, it's not like Lance. Now, I guess Lance isn't a perfect comparison just because, like, it's, you would, even if Lance didn't have that game, obviously he's the guy who's going to get a tribute video.
He made an all-star. Yeah, somebody, he made an all-star game. He fits
right,
the criteria.
Right, yeah, no, and all, so somebody like that, but a performance like that, it's got to be something iconic.
Yeah,
yeah. I guess I just personally, I don't look at the tribute video as something that should only be reserved for. I'd be cool with a Dexter Fowler tribute video. I don't. Anybody that played for the team at all, and part of it is, I give the team the right to basically say, we liked this guy.
Yeah.
He was a really good dude. We liked him. We liked him on the team. He was cool to the equipment staff.
Yep.
Whatever it might be. We like that guy. We're going to give him a tribute.
No, that's fine. And the team obviously feels the way you feel about this. I feel like we're lowering our standards a little bit with the tribute videos. And I feel terrible, again, that it's Victor Caratini. Now, I'm not to your degree where you'd be doing a Matt Dominguez tribute video from the – and Seth's like, who the hell was that? He was the third baseman on that horrible team in 2013. Yeah. Dexter Fowler – now, the thing I remember about Dexter Fowler with the Astros was he was like one of the few veterans on the really bad Astros.
Yeah,
and he bought everybody like a bottle of Johnny Walker Black to open the season that year. They all came in and they had a bottle of whiskey in their lockers that year. So
I was here in 2013, Sean.
No. But Matt Dominguez is a really obscure name. Do you remember Dominguez?
Yeah. Huh? What's that? I remember the name. I couldn't remember.
That wasn't a shot at you.
I was still doing CSN. Like, even though we weren't talking about the Astros at all in 2013, I was doing CSN Houston, so I had to like bone up. And I didn't have Comcast at the time either, which is ironic that they were giving me a check.
Yeah.
But
same exact thing. That was a shot at Matt Dominguez, not a shot at you. Yeah. So that's the criteria. And for me, if the Astros were to ever hire me in a position of tribute video determinator, those would be the criteria. Am I being a jerk?
You're a little bit, as the listeners know, you're kind of snooty and snobby about some things. I think you're being a little snooty and snobby about this. I think you're being a little bit of a killjoy because it doesn't, I guess what's the downside to them showing those tribute videos?
That I get upset about it because we're lowering our standards. Yeah, that's the downside.
You flip on players after they leave way quicker than I do too.
Yeah.
I'm kind of the opinion that as long as they don't leave in a jerk-like fashion.
Yeah.
I live and let live, and I'm cool with those guys.
I flip
on them immediately.
I root against, and I would say even some of the ones that I claim to root for after they leave.
Yeah.
There's a little part of me that when I go look at their OPS being 676 or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, that's good. At least they're not doing this for the Astros. I'm glad they're doing this somewhere else.
So I'm the one that has to keep being reminded that we're doing the PettyCast when we do the PettyCast.
Yeah.
You know, like at least twice during each PettyCast. You're like, hey, Seth, this is the PettyCast, remember?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah. I got to be a jerk. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. The guy who tells his co-host to go die at the end of the show yesterday is actually the nice guy on the show.
Well, that was deserved, yeah.
I stand by that. You number snobs back in the old Southwest days. Yeah.
I was never the one that was being overly strict about it, but I understood why people would say, oh, are you 33 or are you 34 or whatever, like that.
I do too. Yeah. If you have any shot of getting in the emergency exit row,
I like it for the sake of just clarity,
order.
Yeah. And that there are a lot of people that would just there are a lot of people that were liars and cheaters in the old Southwest system, and they would jump on a little bit
earlier. Don't get me wrong, if you were in my group of five, and you belonged in a group of five behind me, but you were kind of leaning into it's just like it, I know it ends with B50, but I'm like B52, like no, you're a horrible person.
We're in a studio now just playing name a player, as Coco Crisp has come up in our conversations. That's because Coco Gauff managing to come back after losing the first set at Wimbledon. Yes, we're just all service, man, when it comes to this.
Yeah, the cool batting
right
stance, too.
Coco Crisp?
Yeah, he used to have his chin on his shoulder, something like that,
It's funny the players that just stick with you, the players that you think about, and you're like, man, when was the last time I thought about this player?
You see that come up every once in a while on social media, like, name a player that randomly this or that,
I mean, I don't want to start that right now.
No,
that's a whole different
thing.
We
got plenty to cover.
But we've been meaning to talk about this because you've been sitting with this, John. You have been like really thinking about the possibility of the missed opportunity that the Texans had.
I don't know if it was necessary. Well, yes, kind of.
Okay, well then correct me if
more,
I'm wrong.
It's more, but no, you're partially right. Was it a missed opportunity last year? I just started thinking about the path the Texans had last year. Was that, and so the question becomes, was that the best path that the Texans will have had in let's say this, you know, window, this 4 or 5 year stretch? Because if you think about it, last year the Chiefs they fell apart, and obviously Patrick Mahomes had an ACL, so there go the Chiefs, they're out of the way. The Ravens, wildly inconsistent, ended up firing John Harbaugh. You know, that's another contender, presumed contender, which, by the way, I think most people have as the leading contender this year in the AFC.
The Ravens?
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I don't know that you can, I don't feel that same level of confidence. And I have to admit, I am somebody I am pretty pro-Ravens generally. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, just when it comes to the excitement that they can bring, obviously Lamar Jackson is that type of player, mm-hmm. the ability that they've clearly had to be able to run the football.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, Derrick Henry continues to get a little older. This is a different offense now, specifically with Declan Rice, who is a first-time play caller, and we know that that can go one way or the other sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say first-time play caller, I mean, he genuinely has not been a part of play calling at all. This is his first time as offense coordinator and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They still haven't done the thing that they've been trying to do for a long time, which is find a wide receiver that it feels like you can lean on. They've kind of done this by putting pieces together and hoping that they all kind of amount to more than the sum of their parts.
Right, right.
And then the thing that has been great, or the thing that hasn't been all that great all recently, is defense. Maybe Jesse Minter being there will get them better. I imagine that that's the case, but it's still a lot of the same dudes, and some of them are getting older in the course of things. So I don't know that I'm certain that, you know, the offense is going to continue to carry them in the way that it did, and I don't know that the defense – I don't know how long, rather, it takes the defense to take a step up. So I'm not actually certain that this is going to be a – they're definitely going to press the top of the AFC this year team.
Well, but that's going into this year. But let's talk about last year and the path that the Texans had – that really sort of broke their way. Chiefs kind of out of the way. Ravens out of the way. The Bengals, Joe Burrow, for what it's worth, I know their defense was bad. You know, Joe Burrow was injured as well.
Yeah.
Then you have Chargers with a new first-year coach in Jim Harbaugh. You had the Jaguars. Really the only team, and you own the Bills. You know, you own the Bills. So of all the AFC contenders, a lot of them kind of fell off last year. So the path was about as clear a path for the Texans.
You're saying that in real time.
Yeah. Yeah, as clear a path for the Texans last year as you possibly could have had. So now let's go to this year.
Yeah.
Let's go to this year. You know how I feel about the Chiefs. You know, Mahomes, maybe he's going to be back, maybe he's not, but I think they've been making some big-time moves. They got, the running game was helped, the defense was helped. Ravens, you know, you just talked about that. Some of the new hires, we'll see how that plays out. Joe Burrow is healthy, and the Bengals helped their defense a little bit. Jim Harbaugh enters year two with the Chargers. We didn't even mention the Jaguars. They're entering year two after a good season. The Drake May and Bo Nix, who had good years last year, are all of a sudden in year three, and they're more entrenched. Was that the easiest path they could have had last year?
I mean, it's possible, but also there's a question of there's still a lot of meat on the bone for the Texans to have to tap into, mm-hmm. to possibly put themselves in a situation where relatively it might be as easy, right? Like, because again, the defense somehow looks better this year.
Yeah.
It looks like the defense could be somehow even better. Like, I've thought to myself that maybe we could have a conversation at some point of, could this defense be genuinely historic?
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how to like figure that out.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. Do we dig into like the statistics of it? Those, mind you, are not the easiest when it comes to defense. But like, mm-hmm. I think we understand the sentiment is you end up with a better safety in that spot where you either had a CJ Gardner-Johnson who was seemingly going to business for himself, or replacement level players, with all due respect to MJ Stewart and Kayvon Wallace and whoever else was holding down the spot. Right. You have somebody who's genuinely good there, who's supposed to be there consistently. Plus, I think the big addition on defense that we all know is that it seems like they're going to be able to stop the run.
Right.
And if they're able to stop the run, I just don't know where you try and find some level of insight to this defense. Talk less of the clear amount of opportunity that was there to be better on offense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this could become, assuming that they hit their marks, this could become like an absolute death laser in the AFC. And no matter how good you're talking about these AFC teams, it is still a pretty easy path because you are Debo on a block.
I agree with everything you say except for the last thing where you said pretty easy path. Because you're right. This could be an historic defense. Absolutely. But this historic defense, or as good as it was last year, didn't have healthy and sort of popping Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Didn't have the Ravens, you know, playing like that. They didn't. And now they're facing a more experienced New England Patriots.
I'm not sure they still have the Ravens. Because also another thing with the Ravens is, remember, their offensive line took a hit this year. And one of the things that is most underrated when we talk about these things and that often ends up showing its face is when that offensive line ain't right, Like, this whole thing is built upon it. That's the foundation.
Yeah.
Similarly, I'm looking at the Chiefs, and I don't know, man. I don't think it's going to be as difficult a path. I'm not saying that. Yeah. Obviously, it was fairly easy, all things considered. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it's going to go from what was clearly an opportunity that was missed to something that is absolutely treacherous. I'm not certain that that's the case.
Right. Well, again, I'm just saying, like, all Joe Burrow, all these guys are going to be healthy. Let's say they're healthy at the end of the season. I just think that's a tougher. Like, they had an opportunity last year with young quarterbacks, you know, Drake May, young quarterback, you know, aging quarterback, Aaron Rodgers with the Steelers. Well, I know, but who knows what they're going to be? He's still aging. They didn't have to face, you know, Bo Nix in the postseason. But they're, now all of a sudden they're better. I'm just saying, like, I think the path.
Bo Nix with a new play caller too,
And a new play caller. But
now
I think they had a golden opportunity, and I don't know if you can bank on. Maybe that's where I am. You can't bank on if you're lining up against Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson and they're healthy. It's a whole different world.
Yeah, I mean that's obviously a different.
Or Joe Burrow.
It's a different fear. Yeah, like, I mean, it's a different fear just when you have a quarterback in particular in the NFL, but a player that can change the game. And it didn't feel like there was nearly those guys in the playoffs this past year. That's that is absolutely the thing that I will be there with you on. I just think that, yeah, man, obviously every year is different. And I don't know that I am in a place where right now I'm looking at the rest of the AFC and going, okay, it's a murderer's row this year. Because, again, you talk about Patrick Mahomes, but this is Patrick Mahomes coming off of that injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have my questions about whether the Kansas City Chiefs, because every dynasty comes to an end at some point. Not saying that I'm definitively setting the end mark for the Kansas City Chiefs dynasty, but I did feel like you saw one of the big hallmarks of the Chiefs last year start to look a little funny in the light, which is literally the big man himself, Andy Reid, when it came to the offensive brilliance that he brought.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like there was some staleness within that. Now, obviously, he is smart enough usually to inject new life into this, but the real change that I saw in their staff was Eric Bieniemy, and maybe Eric Bieniemy comes in and allows them to find some new stuff.
They got a new running back too.
They did add a new running back, but my question is, how terrifying is that if the kind of the concepts that were allowing them to get better play out of what out of the, you know, players that they have aren't elevating the team nearly as much?
Yeah,
because they've asked and they've had to over the course of time elevate the talent that they've had, whether it's wide receiver core or offensive line, when Patrick Mahomes is out here in the Super Bowl laying out, horizontally. Not saying absolutely. Obviously, it should be a better team than it was last year, I imagine. But I don't know that this is going to be like the, again, treacherous path that I think you could start building up in your mind here.
So how are you feeling about Joe Burrow and the Bengals right now?
That is an interesting one because that offense does feel like it's incredible, right? But again, the big caveat is if there's remaining health. And it just feels like Joe Burrow has always unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way that I can play this, right? To just say that there will be an injury.
Yeah.
I also know that they're betting on can this offense or defense rather just be decent. And I would imagine so, but there's also like one of those things where if you just half build a defense, what happens if it falls apart?
Yeah, yeah, and they added some, but not enough, I think. But Joe Burrow with that, I mean, toward the end of the year last year,
they were indeed getting up and down.
They were a holy terror.
They were indeed getting up and down, putting a whole bunch of points up
offensively. And then there's the Bills. You know, I think the Texans just had their number and have had their number, so they're still in play as well. I just think so many things were going the Texans' way last year, especially with the teams that you're facing, that was a golden opportunity. And I just don't know, no matter what you think about Mahomes and the Chiefs, I think everybody's gotten a lot better. The road, the teams you're facing is going to be a lot tougher.
It's possible. Yeah. But again, also, you have to see the season play out.
Sure.
There's always surprises that happen within this where we go, oh, this is not how we anticipated it going. And so one of the things that's interesting is that you're playing a couple of those teams pretty early on to get a gauge of where it is. And then we go from there here on this season. But you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. I'm fascinated by Congo getting out early here.
It's so good.
I really am. I'm fascinated
Houston's
by this happening.
Congo.
That's right. That's right. We're just going to go ahead and claim them right now that they're up. If they fall back, they're going to be on their own
they're
again.
They're back to the Congo.
Yes. we'll let that live there.
All right, Clint. Let's see. I wonder if the people think this is a little warm take. I wonder if the people agree with where your thought process is. This is a Texans thought that you have. And I mean, I want to know so much about this.
Well, I think it's an aggressive take. I think it's a hot take. It's a good offseason take. D'Amico Rines. I think D'Amico Rines is a championship caliber head coach, defensive mind.
I love D'Amico.
I love D'Amico as well. I think Nick Caserio has done a tremendous job digging this organization out of a level of dysfunction that I've never seen in an organization, period, much less in the NFL. I think he's done a hell of a job rebuilding the roster. I think he's done a hell of a job raising the floor of this organization.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
No problem. But there's a couple of things on the offensive side of the football that I just think have to be very difficult for the higher-ups to get beyond. It's very difficult for me to get beyond. It's very difficult for me to have any level of trust and confidence that it's going to change. I don't think it changes this year. My hot take, D'Amico Rines as a head coach will not advance the Houston Texans organization beyond what they are right now until they part ways with Nick Caserio.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh no!
I just wondered if you. Look,
I do.
What got you here?
I think it's hot. I think it's a hot take. I mean, because there's a lot of good.
But what got you here? And when did you get here?
I've been thinking a lot about this season. A lot about what's going on with C.J. Stroud. What's gone on with C.J. Stroud for a time now. What's gone on with the offensive line? I've just been doing a lot of thinking about this, and I cannot, if you're the Texans organization, you can't continue to, you can't continue to allow Nick Caserio to live off of the rebuild. Again, hell of a job, hell of a rebuild. Can't believe it happened as quick as it did. Right? The roster is tremendous. The floor is high. You can't look at this team last year, and I think it's going to happen again this year, but you can't look at this team and say the misses on the offensive line have been not bad, not bad. They have been crippling.
Oh, yeah. They're first and second round picks.
You cannot look at this team where they're at right now, and the weakness of this team, you cannot look at the shortcomings and not grade the hires. Like the way this offensive staff has been plug and play, the way the offensive coordinator was just picked out of 10 years ago from New England and plugged in here, and the way that this system has really failed to produce. I don't believe you can look at anybody but Nick Caserio, and I don't think that it's going to change as long as Nick's here.
Quite frankly, it's bullshit.
Really, the overall thing is D'Amico Rines is going to have to take over the entire football team if they're going to advance. I don't think this approach. I don't think the David Montgomery, Ed Ingram, Wyatt Teller, Braden Smith approach to we're going to run the football better, that's going to be our improvement, I don't think it's going to be enough. And when you look at what, like, really, really what pushes the envelope, and look, I'm not the biggest C.J. Stroud fan, obviously. I think anybody that listens knows that. But just the football, the former quarterback in me, the football mind in me, I just can't get beyond the thought of how C.J. Stroud has been handled and dealt with. Mm. I can't believe I am.
And you think that's more going towards Caserio than it is D'Amico?
Absolutely, 100%. The Bobby Slowick thing, I think they probably pulled the trigger, and I'm on record when it happened. They probably pulled the trigger and fired Bobby Slowick too soon. Based on the early experience they had, now I don't know what was going on behind closed doors, so they may have been forced into it, but to do that and then switch gears completely into the 2000 New England offense, and never at any point in time did you take into consideration that your quarterback may not be his strengths, that may not be the best system for him, to never take into consideration that. You know, your your strengths and weaknesses across the board. I don't know, man. I think that as long as Nick is here, I think they're going to have a hard time offensively. I mean, you look at what the decisions on the offensive side of the ball. The hardest thing to do in football is to find your quarterback. And all of those decisions, where I was going with it earlier, all of those decisions, I'm not the biggest C.J. Stroud fan, but all of those decisions, you very easily, in fact, you can't avoid saying, have potentially ruined a franchise quarterback. You could, now you didn't have no choice with Deshaun. He forced your hand, and then we all know what happened with the lawsuits. All that crap. He let you off the hook getting caught doing all that crap, or it would have it was a bad deal then too, right? This is one where I don't know how you, when the CJ Stroud thing is over, and if it doesn't work out, I don't know how you don't look directly back at Nick Caserio and say how.
Your thoughts. I see people texting in 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch. Clint says he thinks D'Amico Ryans will not advance this organization to where they want to get to until he and Nick Caserio part ways, because you believe this needs to be a complete D'Amico, from a football perspective, D'Amico visioned team.
D'Amico needs
and
to go.
And you don't think it is that right now.
No,
it's probably
I
do split.
Not. Yeah. I do not. And I think anybody that isn't employed by the Texans, yeah. I think anybody that doesn't see that is lying to themselves. I think it's blatantly obvious that Nick's making the decisions on the offensive side of the football. I think D'Amico's handed the reins over to him. Until D'Amico takes his thing back over and says, I'm going to go out and I'm going to hire the best offensive coordinator I can find, and that guy's going to be a perfect fit for my quarterback, and I'm going to build around my quarterback. Until that happens, I don't think you're going to 2,000 New England Patriots your way to beyond the second round. I just don't think it's going to happen.
I'm thinking through this as you are speaking, like I'm sure many of you are. And my thought is, in this stretch, when is the time, and maybe Tyler, you think it too, when is the time that you felt most confident in this team? When's the time? And this run since they've had D'Amico, and this run, they've been to three straight playoffs, three straight double win seasons. Two of the three, they've won the division. They've won a playoff game every year. When did you feel most confident in this team?
When Joe Mixon was rolling and you had three, they were trying to stretch the field and playing to CJ's strengths.
It was
mid-year
after CJ's rookie year, yeah. Going into the next yes. year.
Yep.
That is the most confident I have felt.
That's the correct answer.
And at that time, that was clearly a D'Amico is the top football person.
No question.
And Bobby everything runs through him.
Yeah, those young guys were so ahead of schedule.
And
you had to say that. You had to think that.
It was, because let's just be honest, them ain't feel like no Nick Caserio moves.
Bobby Slowick? Or are you talking about Joe Mixon?
Bobby Slowick,
Joe Mixon and Diggs.
Bobby Slowick, we know who he came with. He came with D'Amico. D'Amico yep. knew they were in San Francisco together. That was his dude. And then we saw the vision of the team was through D'Amico. I still always that playoff game against the Colts, basic playoff game against the Colts. Whoever won was going to win the division and get in, and then whoever lost didn't. At that halftime, my man said, we're going to go as far as C.J. Stroud takes us.
Yeah.
That was the mindset, and that was how they were operating. And then in between that year, he not only said, man, let's go get Daniil, let's go get such and such. He said, let's go get Diggs, let's go get Joe Mixon. That does not sound like New England trading a second round pick to go get Joe Mixon or to go get Stephon Diggs. That sounds like a D'Amico led team. Because the next year when it felt like it shifted, they went out and got
Oh, 2 for 20. They got cheap on the offensive line and did
Applebee's.
Like I mean,
they got rid of Laramie Tunsil.
Yep. So the even though I think this team is probably better, like right now, maybe is the best chance just from a team perspective. The time that you felt the most confident to me, the time I felt the most confident in the Texans, that last time, D'Amico to me clearly was the person who was the vision from a football standpoint of this team, and it was the most confident that you felt in CJ.
No question. No question whatsoever. I didn't think of it from that perspective, but you're nail on the head right there. There is no doubt about it. Like I just absolutely despise this offense. And the way that they've handled their quarterback the last year has been is a tad bit mind boggling. I don't think you get better with this approach.
Yep, text line coming in. I 100% agree with Clint. Debbie effing Downer. We will never get anywhere else until we get a new quarterback and a better OC. My guy Clint, love that hot take. We go nowhere until we aren't Patriot South.
Things are fixable.
Oh, Clint, I don't often agree with you or like what you say, but I can completely understand what you're saying about D'Amico. D'Amico doesn't seem to want to have any part of it with the offense, and that has got us to a point where our GM is having to run it. No, I think clearly he was all good with taking over when he first got here. I don't know what happened that allowed Nick to get back into even with Nick, D'Amico.
Shoot, he got a year removed from that dysfunctional mess that was before. He got a year removed from that Easterby mess.
Because it was clear,
worked his way back in there, boy.
It was clear D'Amico was the top.
Yeah.
Right. Even though technically he hired the GM hired and vice president has a higher
job title
than the head coach and he hired him. There was a point we hired when D'Amico got hired. Well, Nick Caserio can't fire him.
Mm-mm. D'Amico was the most powerful person.
I still don't think he can, but he's the loudest person. But somehow those two have gotten even.
Agreed. Seems like it.
Yeah.
Seems like it. And just don't like the approach on the entire offensive side of the ball. And I tell you, man, this is a hill I'm gonna die on. I can't just sit around and let folks talk about Nick Caley. I mean, I don't mean not talk about, but just like put all the blame on the offensive coordinator. Hey, man, that was a never called plays guy that just got plugged and that said, yeah, I'll take the job. I'll take the job with all these former New England Patriot guys. Yeah, I'll jump in there. The plan was trash from jump.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's absolutely refreshing!
The journey? It starts here, at your local ballpark.
on the fields where dreams are born.
All right, fellas, here we go.
Every swing, every step, every moment, it all counts. The fundamentals kids learn today, they build the skills and confidence for tomorrow. Pitch, hit, and run. Find a local competition near you and sign up at pitchhitrun.com. Let the journey begin. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.